This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, ducks down, Ian Book, and we are all tied at 20.
Looney back to Hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament Championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, cuts down, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Deckery! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
We welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 WSBT, and on the Sports Beat app, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. It is 7 minutes after the top of the hour. Thanks for joining us on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We have Sports Beat until 7 o'clock. Then at 8:10, it is pregame coverage from Atlanta. ACC basketball tonight, it's the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame taking on the Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech. And we've got that ball game for you. Tip is set for 8:30 here on 96.1 WSBT. Jack Nolan is ready to roll down in the Peach State to bring you the play-by-play of Notre Dame and Georgia Tech. And it is a great opportunity next hour to break down the ball game. Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune, lead columnist, Fighting Irish basketball insider, and a whole lot more, Church League All-Star and Hall of Famer. He's going to fill in for Sean, who is off again today. So we'll have plenty of basketball conversation to get to. Next hour, we have two segments on Notre Dame basketball. We have rapid fire with basketball and football questions. And at the end of the 6 o'clock hour, we will talk a little bit about the struggles of the Fighting Irish hockey team over the last month and a half and what they have in front of them this weekend in your old neck of the woods, Columbus, Ohio, as the Irish will take on the Ohio State University Buckeyes. But coming up at the bottom of this hour, it is the finale. Eric, Associated Press college football voter, has turned in his top 25, and we are going to run down the top 10 and where he ranked the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame after an 11-2 2019 campaign. The My Five question of the day, the five biggest takeaways from the national championship game Monday night, and how it relates to Notre Dame reestablishing themselves as a title contender in 2020. Was this difficult?
No.
Okay, there you go. We'll roll through those answers coming up in just a little bit here on WSBT Radio. Well, we spent pretty much the entire program yesterday focusing on the news of the day. Tom Rees, quarterback coach at Notre Dame, elevated to offensive coordinator by Fighting Irish football coach Brian Kelly. No surprise, it was a lightning rod decision. As you look at social media, there's a lot of noise, without a doubt, on social media, and that will continue. But again, as we talked about, we being Eric and I, there's still another piece of the puzzle, so hold back for a little bit. Let's see what that extra piece is to the offensive coaching staff and how that could make this coaching staff look a little different, which may alter your thinking about this particular decision. So maybe just hold back a little bit on your final thoughts on this decision by Coach Kelly until this final piece of the puzzle comes about. And I would assume it's going to come, I would think, fairly quickly with that open vacancy on the offensive coaching staff. Brian can go a lot of different ways with that opening on the coaching staff. It can make the coaching staff look a whole lot different. We'll wait for that final decision. But as we now move on with this Fighting Irish football team looking ahead to 2020 with Tom Rees, or Tommy Rees, or Thomas Rees being the offensive coordinator for the Fighting Irish, what will the offense look like next year? Hey, it's going to be Brian Kelly's offense with, I'm sure, some Tom or Tommy Rees personality to it. I'm very hesitant because I get yelled at on Twitter if I call him Tom or Tommy. on social media, he reacted to that question. He called himself Tommy last year, so I don't want to get yelled at for calling him Tommy, but apparently I do. Your article, you just went with the slash, Tommy slash Tom, so everybody's happy.
You know, I just thought of a great campaign that Notre Dame should have done when they announced him as the offensive coordinator.
Okay.
Now, you know what the I'll just say it, and then if you don't get the connection, I will explain it. It should have said, not sorry, Reese. That's the now tagline for Reese's peanut butter cups. They're like, not sorry, Reese's, because they talk about how delicious they are and stuff.
I thought it was that pop song, I'm sorry, not sorry. I thought you were going that direction.
No, not sorry.
And that
sorry.
Was Brian Kelly saying, not sorry.
If you knew the commercial, you would have said, Eric, that's brilliant, or Eric, that's adorable, but you just look confused, and that's okay. We'll move on.
I guarantee you, had I known the slogan, I would be all in right now.
You would have said, oh my gosh, that's brilliant.
I'm just going to reserve judgment on your thought, like I'm reserving judgment on all these decisions that were made yesterday until we get all of the decisions in place and line them all up. As you talk to former players that played with Tom Reese. Oh, here we go again. I'm sticking with Tommy. I'm done with this.
I'm sticking with Tommy. That's his preference.
Yes, it is. He said that on social media. Tommy. Yeah. So there you go. They put Tom Reese on the picture on UND.com, but I'm going Tommy because he told us it's Tommy. So let's stop this nonsense. All right. You've talked to a lot of players that played with Tommy Reese at Notre Dame. You talked to former players that were on the team when he was the quarterback coach. And the ones you talked to and quoted, they seem very excited about this idea of Tommy Reese ready to go as offensive coordinator. In fact, I think someone said he was born for this particular role. As Brian Kelly evaluated this decision, a lot of things went into it. Is there a small part of this decision, or is it more than I actually think? Brian sees the players reacting very well to Tommy Reese, and do you believe one of the major factors for BK in this decision is the relationship that Reese has with the current players on the team, including his quarterback?
I think it factors into it. I don't think Brian Kelly wanted to make this a democratic decision, but I think he wanted input because I think Brian Kelly felt like his team was better when Brian had a better relationship with his players. Remember that one of the big things from post 2016, I mean, Greer Martini, I did a story right before Notre Dame's bowl game, Citrus Bowl game in 2017. Or no, it was before last year's playoff game where I talked to Quentin Nelson's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a lot of details about those post. And Greer Martini goes, you don't even know my bleeping name, to Brian Kelly in his interview. And the fact that these players feel like Brian Kelly's invested in them as players and people is a big difference. And I think the players also feel like Tommy Reese is invested in them. And I think that's why this is a popular thing. It's not like Tommy buys some ice cream with sprinkles after a win. It's because they have confidence in who he is. You know, the offensive linemen loved Harry Hiestand and still do. And I'm not saying this versus Jeff Quinn. I'm just giving you an example, somebody we can talk openly about. Harry was Patton. Harry was hard. And those guys loved him. So
sure
it's
did.
Not about just being super nice. It's about knowing that that coach cares about you as a player and a person. And I think that's the vibe Tommy Reese gives off to players. And just seeing him in action. You can see a good journalist and you could say, boy, I like the way he asks that question. That was really clever the way that he did that, or I like the way he ordered that story. And I think you see that in coaches. You see how they carry themselves. I think this is genuine. I could not find anybody that had been around Tommy a lot that had even neutral feelings about him. They were all positive. And that was eye-opening to me, you know, because nobody is universally loved. You know, everybody has somebody that's their arch enemy.
But it feels like there just was a disconnect, or I don't know if that's the right word with Chip Long. I don't know if disconnect is the right word.
I think it was it's kind of ironic. The story I did last summer on Chase Claypool's transformation is Chase and Chip didn't get along at all until they went out to dinner last spring, and Chase finally saw that Chip cared about him, and his kind of abrasive coaching style was kind of his way of caring, and they finally kind of saw eye to eye on things, because Chip used to threaten that he was going to move Chase to defense. And Chase was like, bring it on, because I'd be really good at it, which he would.
Unreal.
But
sounds like tough love.
It was. In that case, there was an understanding. I think there were other players that felt like it was just beyond abrasive. It was abusive, and that it really wasn't helping them get better. And I know some defensive players, their families felt, you know, boy, that wouldn't have flown if their son was an offensive player.
Yeah, you told me those stories.
Yeah, so I think that the players embracing this, I mean, Brian Kelly has a leadership council, and when they were looking for offensive line coaches, he did get input from a group of players that he respected. I think he wants to be more in touch with his team. But again, he doesn't want to turn this into a referendum where everybody has an equal vote. He just kind of wants to take the temperature of his team and then make the best decision, because, I mean, sometimes they don't know. You know, if the media were voting, I'm not sure the way the media would have voted for offensive coordinator. I think there was a lot of support in the media for Joe Moorhead,
which I don't get.
So, who is now going to be the offensive coordinator at Oregon. So we'll see, you know, how that works out. I didn't think it was a fit. I didn't think it was a match.
I don't either.
But I think he has a very good reputation from his Penn State games as being a really good offensive coach. I don't know him. I've never met him. But the things that were in the Clarion Ledger about why he was let go wanted me to pump the brakes and get to the bottom of that before you hire somebody and say, okay, wait, the offensive coordinator that they're letting go was let go because of non-X and O reasons. The guy they want to hire to replace him was let go at Mississippi State because of non-X and O reasons.
Eric, there needed to be a revolution on defense before they hired Mike Elko.
Absolutely.
They needed to change everything. And that led to going outside the program for Elko, which brought Clark Lee here, which evolved into now a wonderful decision. As we sit here, prior to the announcement of Reese being named offensive coordinator, there was not a need for a revolution. You didn't need to overturn the offensive government on the coaching staff, because it's an offense that was scoring a lot of points. Now, with that being said, we have both said that in order for this team to get to where they want to go, the running game has to take a huge step forward. But that can be accomplished within the framework of what happened yesterday. So I just didn't see the revolution of changing everything by bringing in a Moorhead when Brian Kelly's system works fine. That's been proven. But yes, the running game has to become electric, because you look at Clemson, you look at LSU, you look at these teams that are right there at the top of the heap. They've got running backs that scare you. They got running backs that can make plays. Sure, Burrow and Lawrence have the ability to throw it all over the place, although Lawrence didn't look very good in the title game. Burrow was fantastic. You need an outstanding running game, and I believe, from what we know right now about the changes, that can be accomplished with what they have. And again, there's still that extra piece of the coaching staff that we don't know about that could be another major factor in bringing the running game along to a higher level.
You know, in the whole little rolled-out announcement yesterday,
okay,
didn't you think one thing that was kind of interesting that was implied by Brian Kelly but wasn't in the release was about calling plays. It wasn't mentioned in there that he would be the play caller necessarily.
Well, Eric, I'll tell you what. I got to be honest with you. I just assumed that went with the duties, but now that you say that it was not included, I don't know if that is by accident or if that is on purpose. That's a very, very good point. Do you have any intel on that?
No, but I just thought it was interesting.
I had not thought about that.
And I know the people that write the releases, and they have to do this. I really got gummed up in the so-and-so and so-and-so offensive coordinator promoted from the so-and-so and so-and-so family quarterbacks coach. All the endowment positions. I don't think the tight end coach is an endowed position, so they could just be the tight ends coach.
We need to put money together. It can be the Al Lessar tight end coach. That would be perfect.
So.
Interesting. You got me on that, Eric. I don't know what to say. He is
on his resume. It does say he is still the quarterback's coach. So he's not changing there and just being the offensive coordinator.
But I guess I look at, as a Denver Bronco fan, we hired Pat Shurmur to be offensive coordinator. It didn't say he was the play caller in the release. That's just assumed. So that is my assumption.
Yeah, I that's my assumption, too. I just thought it was interesting.
Thank you for starting that conspiracy theory, which will now blow up message boards.
I just thought it was interesting.
Oh, gosh. Now you got my head spinning. So do you feel like that having a championship-level defense isn't enough anymore? You had an interesting thought in your recent article in the South Bend Tribune about the decisions of Brian Kelly. And you wrote, is it no longer defense that wins championships, but defense and offense wins championships in the 2020s? Give me a little thought process behind your thinking to writing that.
Well, I don't have the figures in front of me, but I went back and I looked at the rankings of the national championships and champions in the 16 BCS games and the 6 playoff games.
Okay.
And thought, okay, LSU is number one in total offense and scoring offense. I wonder if that's ever happened before. No.
Mm-mm.
And in many years, it wasn't close. The 2002 Ohio State national champions were 70th in total offense. There were a lot of teams that were sub 30, the 30s and 40s, including some of those Alabama teams. I think Nick Saban felt like at some point he had to make that next stride to having a dynamic offense to go with his defense, that they felt like, why can't we have a Big 12 offense and an SEC defense? Why do we just have to have an SEC defense? And when you look at the teams that were, you could say, well, gosh, is LSU an outlier? They were first in total offense, first in scoring offense, second in pass efficiency. But then when you look at the other teams in total offense, the 4 playoff teams were 1, 3, 4, 5. Notre Dame was 43.
Hmm.
Now, in scoring offense, they were in the neighborhood. They were 13th. And the playoff teams were 1, 4, 3, 6. So they were all in top 6. That didn't happen before. You think about LSU and Alabama were 1-2 in scoring and 1-2 in pass efficiency in different order. Remember when LSU and Alabama played for the national championship? Or they played a regular season game that was like 12-10. Then they played again for the national championship. So I think when you look at these teams now, you look at Clemson last year. Clemson was a bear on defense, but they were also very dynamic with Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. They had a great offensive line, the champ before. So I think these last few years, you've seen a different model where Notre Dame, I'll tell you, the team that would have been a national champion maybe a few years ago is Georgia. You look at Georgia's defensive numbers, 1 in rush defense, 8 in pass efficiency defense, 3 in total defense, 1 in scoring defense. But on offense, 41 rush offense, 72 pass offense, 61 total offense.
Mm-hmm.
That's not getting it done. that they can't, when they get into the games with these other teams like LSU and Clemson, Ohio State, they cannot compete because they're not excellent on both sides of the ball. And I think the model is changing where it's just not pass efficiency. You have to be able to have big scoring numbers and big total offense numbers and not just against group of five crummy teams.
Joe Burrow's a different breed. His ability to process information quickly at the collegiate level is very, very difficult to find.
Correct.
He evolved into such a quick reader of defenses over the last year and just had one of the great seasons, if not the greatest quarterback season we have seen.
The hope of Ian Book being a better quarterback as a third-year starter really centers on the concept, can Ian Book be an offensive coordinator on the field? Dave Aranda, LSU's defensive coordinator, was talking about this going into the championship game, that the difference that Joe Burrow, not only is a great athlete, he has the mind of an offensive coordinator, so he can do those kind of things. And you could even see, I mean, when I watched him, where did I see the differences from Ian Book? I mean, yeah.
First thing is accuracy and ability and willingness to throw the deep ball.
Correct.
With separation by the wide receivers.
Right, with separation by the wide receivers. And Ian is going to have players that, at least from a speed standpoint, should be able to separate. We'll see if a route running, they can separate. But, you know, somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I was looking at the ratings right at that time, Chase and Kevin Austin were only a couple spots different in terms of their rating as far as wide receiver. They were in the same neighborhood in terms of who they were supposed to be. Kevin Austin is a really good receiver. The other thing that I think, you know, was different between Burrow and Book, a big difference for me is Burrow's ability to play backyard football a little bit. That one little dink pass that he threw that turned into be such a big gain where he just kind of blipped it over the line. He escaped from a sack. Blipped it over the line, and it was just brilliant. And I think I want to see, that's kind of what I'm going to be looking for from Ian in the spring, is if I see, if Tommy Rees helps bring out more of that in Book this spring, that the offensive play caller and the quarterback relationship is very, very important. And so, you know, will this enhance who Ian Book can be? And I'm not saying Ian Book can ever be as good as Joe Burrow is, but in 2018, statistically, he was better and quite a bit better. Yep. So I'm really interested to see this Rees Book synthesis and what this can turn out to be.
When I thought about watching that Clemson-LSU game, we felt like going into the Notre Dame-Clemson semifinal, the use of the tight end for Notre Dame could be a very valuable weapon against that Clemson defense who had struggled. And really, as I think the coaching staff pointed out during the offseason, the tight end wasn't really emphasized in the passing game in 2018, and it never was a factor in the game against Clemson, which we were surprised by. How about LSU? Even though Thaddeus Moss had five catches for 36 yards, but he did his damage in the red zone. The LSU tight end had a couple of touchdown receptions against that Clemson defense. Halfway through the 5 o'clock hour, Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Eric, a longtime voter in the Associated Press poll for college football. He has turned in his final top 25. Where did he rank the Irish? We know who 1 and 2 are. That's pretty obvious, the two teams that played for the national championship. But what did he do with Oklahoma, who looked very poor in the national semifinals? What about Alabama rebounding to beat Michigan? Did that factor in? Maybe moving them up a couple of spots. Answers all coming up in just a moment. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and on the Sports Beat app.
Budweiser. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues with a look at Eric Hansen's Associated Press Top 10 Rankings on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
It is the end of the college football season, so our final chance to get into the mind of the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, Eric Hansen, his thoughts on the AP Top 10, his final rankings for the 2019 season. Sanford and Son music, you know why it was picked?
Because I'm a junkyard dog.
Well, that's part of it. But also, one person's trash is another person's treasure. And I think Oklahoma falls into that category. I don't know what to think about Oklahoma after watching them in the national semifinals. And what do I think about Baylor, who beat nobody, but yet lost Oklahoma twice, and now we kind of know who Oklahoma is. So what in the heck is the Big 12 now? So a lot of things to ponder in this final poll. Now, we will tell you that Notre Dame did not end up in Eric's top 10. So when that happens, we start with Notre Dame. And Eric, as we start things off, what did you do with Brian Kelly's 11-2 Fighting Irish football team after putting a whooping on the Iowa State Cyclones in the Camping World Bowl?
I put them at number 11. And again, I think there were a lot of teams that were bunched together there. And you can't dismiss Notre Dame going on a six-game winning streak to end the season. And people just don't give them enough credit for whomping Navy. Navy is a top 20 team, but it's Navy. If Navy's name was Michigan and they were ranked about similarly in the final poll, it would mean a whole lot more.
Eric, this is a rare year Notre Dame is undervalued. And it's because of one game we've talked about a million times, but the Michigan game overrides any other thought of any other game or performance of this team in 2019.
Well, and I think that there's some human nature involved there from voters, not necessarily me, but let me give you, for instance, what were we talking about the week of Michigan? Who came out? We were having kind of a debate because Kirk Herbstreit came out and he said, I think this team is better than the 2018 team.
Correct. And he was talking about Notre Dame.
Right. And then they get run by Michigan. So you, as a voter or an analyst, you don't want to get fooled twice in the same season by a team. And I think that enters part of it. I don't think it's necessarily fair. But again, when you're comparing teams, you can't take that game out of there. When you're comparing Wisconsin to Notre Dame, a Wisconsin team that beat Michigan by 31 and Notre Dame lost to them by 31, that's a 62-point swing.
Eric, analytics are very important when you put together a poll ranking, right?
Right.
The data, there is no data for feelings. This isn't Dr. Laura. So you cannot, as a voter, worry about being fooled. That's not a part of the equation. You look at the data given to you. You've got to take feelings out of this.
But that's what a lot of media do. Who wins the coach of the year usually? It's usually not the coach of the national championship.
The surprise team.
It was the surprise team. Now, LSU was surprising in how dynamic they were offensively, and that's why Ed Orgeron won a lot of these. But generally, it would have been somebody like Matt Rhule at Baylor. You know, it wouldn't have been Ed Orgeron. And so for making crummy picks, then you reward the team that fooled you the most in a positive way.
Unbelievable.
He must be a great coach because he fooled me. I thought they were going to be much worse.
I am so happy for the state of Louisiana.
There you go.
Okay, so you have the Irish number 11. That's the third time in the Brian Kelly era they've finished 11th, right?
Well, in my poll, they finished 11th in the coaches' poll. They were 12th in the AP poll.
I thought in the commercial break you said 11. Okay.
In the coaches' poll, I said.
Oh, okay.
I just saw the coaches' poll because it came out so much later. I guess they had to make a sandwich. We had to have our poll in immediately after the game, our vote immediately after the game. It was posted an hour after the game.
Okay. Let's move along now to your official top 10 to end the year in college football. We will start at number 10. We begin in the old Big Ten Conference with the Rose Bowl runner-ups, a team that lost to Illinois this year, loses the Rose Bowl, but yet finishes in the top 10, the Wisconsin Badgers.
Well, Wisconsin resume was kind of weird. They had two losses to Ohio State, one where they absolutely got boat raced, one where they were leading at halftime and were very competitive. They had a big 31-point win over Minnesota. They beat a ranked Iowa team. And they beat Michigan by 31 points. I mean, they had top 25 wins. They had top 25 losses. Honestly, I thought they were a better team than Oregon. But Oregon won the game because Oregon was able to force turnovers. And that was a big bugaboo for Wisconsin all season. So I still think with four losses, you know, would Notre Dame have beaten Ohio State either of those times? Would Notre Dame played Michigan, they didn't beat them. And then Notre Dame would have crushed Illinois. No offense, Darren. I know you're an Illinois fan. The Illinois
results
game,
are results, my friend. Just read the scoreboard.
Maybe I didn't weigh the Illinois loss enough in that. But
here's my argument.
Yeah.
For you being right. Even though I don't like Wisconsin in the top 10, but here's my argument against myself. I look at the teams around Wisconsin in the poll. Minnesota, should they be ahead of Wisconsin? No.
No, they beat them by 31.
Should Baylor be ahead of Wisconsin? No, they didn't beat anybody.
Yeah.
Auburn, they beat Alabama. They played LSU tough, so there's a slight argument.
Yeah.
To me, Notre Dame is the team that probably, you could argue, should be ahead of Wisconsin.
Right, and I definitely labored over that decision, as I did the number 9 team.
Did you do special breathing when you were laboring? Did you ask for ice cream and ice?
Yes. Give me ice cream, please. But I really kind of, and I said, would I rank Notre Dame just because I'm more familiar with them? Number 9, I really had issues with. I didn't know what to do with them.
And number 9 is
Oklahoma
Sooners out of the Big 12 Conference, who were destroyed by LSU in the semifinals.
Well, the other thing that was really made Oklahoma a candidate to drop more spots than you normally would a playoff team is because the Big 12 was so poor in bowl games. Yeah. Now, you had a comparative score. If you're going to play the compare the score game, you have to allow the Notre Dame loss to Michigan and Wisconsin's victory over Michigan to be in play, because Oklahoma barely beat Iowa State. They beat them at home. They beat them on a botched two-point conversion with 26 seconds left in the game, won 42-41. Notre Dame absolutely whooped up on an Iowa State team that was extremely invested in being in that bowl game and had a big crowd there. And so I thought, is Notre Dame better than Oklahoma?
Yes.
I honestly think when you match up resumes, had Notre Dame had more top 25 wins, I think I could have put them ahead. But Virginia fell out. USC fell out. Otherwise, I think you could have made a case for Notre Dame.
Eric's AP final top 25 college football vote. We're up to number 8, back to the Big Ten. The Penn State Nittany Lions, a top 10 team, even without one of the great offensive coordinators in history, Joe Moorhead.
I had them 8, and they are a team, again, where I don't have a great sense of how good they are. You know, they're, you know, they lost to Minnesota. They beat Michigan, but
struggled
in the end. In their bowl game, they played the group of 5 team Memphis. They outscored them, but they gave up 39 points to Memphis, which is a lot more than Cincinnati gave up.
Did you say Cincinnati?
Yeah. So, you know, but based on their resume, that's kind of where they kind of fell. But I'm not convinced. If Wisconsin and Penn State played each other and Wisconsin didn't get sloppy with the ball, I think Wisconsin would beat them.
To number 7 in your final AP vote, we go to the SEC, the Alabama Crimson Tide, who rebounded after losing to Auburn in the Iron Bowl by beating Jimmy Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines on New Year's Day.
Yeah, it was really interesting, and at some point I'm going to have to research this. Alabama's metrics weren't off the charts good. They were better on offense than they were on defense, but they finished below Notre Dame in rushing offense. They finished below Notre Dame in total defense. When was the last time that happened, that Notre Dame finished ahead of Alabama in total defense?
Yeah, bumfuzzle, that's a southern word, means you don't know what the heck's happening.
And yet, there were elements of that Alabama team that were amazing. Tua, when he was healthy, was great. Those three receivers, I take them any day on my team. The NFL's going to take two of them because they're coming out early. But Alabama number 7.
Okay, we will move along to number 6. It is the Rose Bowl champions out of the Pac-12, the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah. You know, they played a good schedule. They played that Auburn game early. That game kept them out of the playoff. And people say, well, you shouldn't play those kind of games. It's a lose-lose situation. There's too much risk and not enough reward. I'm glad Oregon played that game. I reward teams for playing a difficult schedule.
Yes, sir.
And they beat Wisconsin. They deserve to be 6.
Eric's AP, final top 25 vote, up to number 5, also from the old SEC, the Florida Gators.
They lost to 2 top 4 teams. They were competitive on all their games. They had some good wins. Unfortunately, they didn't look great against Virginia in the Orange Bowl, but they won that game, so they deserve to be 5th for me.
Now to the top 4. In at number 4, from the SEC, the Georgia Bulldogs.
They had a playoff defense and a Camping World Bowl offense. You know,
Ooh. Yeah.
When you look at their numbers at the end of the year, Darren, Georgia finished 4 spots ahead of Notre Dame in rushing offense. In total offense, they were 18 spots behind. Given that offensive line, you talk about where there should be an offensive coordinator debate, it should be in Georgia. Now, I realize they had turnovers with wide receivers, but their wide receivers were in the oven too long.
You know why Georgia could have been better offensively? You know how you fix that problem? You bring Odell Beckham Jr. to Athens and hand out money to the offensive players. That would have inspired them to be even better.
Is that right?
Number 3 in your vote.
Where's my $10?
The Ohio State University Buckeyes, who almost took out Clemson in the semis.
Yeah, and when you look at them, just their raw numbers, if you just looked at their rankings and all the statistics, you would say blindly that was the national champion.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Ohio State would have given LSU a better game. That would have certainly been a crazy storyline with Burrow going against his old team.
Yeah.
I think LSU was destined to win it, no matter who they played. Sean was right.
Up to number 2, the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, for a while that looked like it was going to happen for
Clemson. Go Tigers!
And then LSU
figured out the 3-1-7 scheme.
Yeah, they figured out the 3-1-7 scheme. They also figured out how to keep Trevor Lawrence in check. I mean, he had a 101 pass efficiency rating, which is in the neighborhood of what Ian Book had against Clemson the year before.
Okay, so Clemson.
Number 2.
All right, we are up to, obviously, number 1, the undefeated and now very wealthy LSU Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Yeah, I'm glad we went to Mike Anderson's ate crawfish that night.
Joe Burrow was the best player in college football.
Bar none.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close.
What a great story.
No question. Now might be coming home to be the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals. Oof. All right, that is Eric's AP vote. The final one of the year. He's got Notre Dame at number 11. And, of course, LSU number 1 with Clemson 2, Ohio State 3, Georgia 4, and Florida number 5. When we come back, the My 5 question of the day, 9 minutes in front of the top of the hour at WSBT and on the SportsBeat app.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
He's Eric. I'm Darren. Today's question, the five biggest takeaways from the national championship game Monday night and how it relates to Notre Dame reestablishing themselves as a title contender in 2020.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
Well, when you look at the wide receivers in that game, they look different than a lot of the Notre Dame wide receivers. And so, and a lot of them were younger players. And my slogan is no more oven, no more air fryer. Get your best playmakers on the field.
Do you have the gift receipt for that air fryer I got? You're not going to use it over at the Goog? Come on.
I think you've got to get those guys on the field and you've got to coach them up.
No question.
And you know what? Georgia, one of the reasons Georgia wasn't in the playoff is because they couldn't coach their young wide receivers up. And that Pickens was a heck of a receiver.
Four,
I'm sorry. The coordinators earn their pay. You know, they're paid a lot of money. They're paid like head coaches used to. And you can see in these games, I mean, Dave Aranda and Brett Venables as defensive coordinators, the Brady-Steve Ensminger combination, Jeff Scott, and that crew at Clemson, I mean, these are the best of the best. So these coordinators are earning their money, and they make a difference.
The biggest takeaways from the national championship game and how it relates to Notre Dame reestablishing themselves as a title contender in 2020.
Okay. Number three.
Well, again, I showed that total offense and scoring offense were relevant with all the playoff teams, which normally isn't the case. And I think a big reason is you have these incredible athletes at quarterback like Tua, who wasn't in the playoff but injured, Trevor Lawrence, Jalen Hurts, and especially Joe Burrow, who have an offensive coordinator's mindset on the field combined with exceptional athletic skills. And Notre Dame needs to tap into that because I think Ian Book can at least replicate the offensive coordinator mind skills, and I think he's a better athlete than people think.
Number two is
that pass efficiency defense is becoming very relevant. You look at the teams, Ohio State was one in pass efficiency defense. Clemson was two, LSU was seven, and the team that got blown out, Oklahoma, was 83rd. Notre Dame was fifth. Number five.
Okay.
Number one.
The number one takeaway that pertains to Notre Dame as we move into 2020, you do have to have a dynamic offense to go with those elite defensive skills. Notre Dame was 18th in total defense this year. That is where you need to be. So now the offense has got to come up. You look at Notre Dame's offensive numbers, they were 13th in scoring offense, 12 in sacks allowed, 5th in turnovers lost, but 45th in rush offense, 43rd in total offense, third downs, they were 65th. Those are the circles. That's where Tommy Reese needs to make his money.
That's the My 5 question of the day from 96.1 WSBT and on the SportsBeat app.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports section.
Tom Noy, or Tommy Noy, whatever you want to call him, is a busy guy. He has a high school column on Jaden Ivey, who is at La Lemure now. He was recently nominated for the McDonald's All-Star Basketball game. We have Notre Dame at Georgia Tech men's hoops. We'll have a staff report on what happens there. We have a Notre Dame women's advance from Anthony Anderson. Penn Central girls basketball, Marion St. Joe boys. Tom Noy's got a live chat tomorrow at
10 a.m.
and much, much more.
That was a great wrap-up in 50 seconds of what's coming up in the South Bend Tribune on 96.1 WSBT South Bend.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win!
From 96.1 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cub Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with the De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Your hosts are Tom Noy and Darren Pritchett.
It is now 7 minutes after the top of the hour. It is the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Wednesday, January the 15th of 2020. We are brought to you by Budweiser and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Sean Steyer's off again today, filling in the Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune, lead columnist, Church League Hall of Famer Tom Noy joins us here on 96.1 WSBT and on the SportsBeat app on a night in which the Fighting Irish basketball team down in Atlanta to take on, I would say they're kind of an upstart, Georgia Tech team. It has been a cellar dweller for a few years in the ACC. They're, at least they're crawling up the stairs a little bit, having beaten North Carolina and BC on the road and losing to Duke in the midst of that little three-game swing. So at least a Georgia Tech team that's playing a little better. And let's be honest, Tom, even some really good Notre Dame teams have had trouble winning down there in Atlanta.
I don't know what it is about that building. That it's just their personal. If Banker's Life Fieldhouse has become Notre Dame's house of horrors for hoops, McCamish Pavilion is right there behind it because they can't win there. I think they're 1-11 all-time in Atlanta. Going to be a tough one tonight. So let's hurry up and talk so I can hop on the company charter and get to the game. Yeah, no, that's not happening. No,
I was going to say, I would assume your company.
not WSBT? No, I am not in Atlanta, obviously. So we'll see what happens. Like they're one, Notre Dame's 1-4. Georgia Tech, 3-3. Georgia Tech feeling really good about itself because their last couple of games they won at North Carolina and they took apart a Boston College team. They were up 21 on Boston College that beat Notre Dame. So it's again, it's one of those things. And Mike Bray said it the other day. Why am I whistling over?
Because
here?
Your headphones are off your ear.
Well, they're.
I know it's not the most comfortable set of headphones. You can go without headphones. I'll just yell really loud.
The quality of those headphones. The quality of those headphones. Come on.
Those were my headphones like 12 years ago, and they're just used as the spare set. So
well,
I apologize.
They look like they were used like 112 years ago, but that's another story. So, as Mike Bray said yesterday, like nobody's going to give Notre Dame anything. They're 1-4. It's not like they say, hey, we went 3-15 last year. We struggled. We really need a win. Like, you got to go and get it. You got to go and do it. Let's see if they do it tonight.
I'm in a weird spot.
Join the club.
Well, it's because it was obviously a season of change last year. All the young guys entering the program, the injuries was a factor as well. But even if they were completely healthy, would they have been a 500 team in the ACC? No. But Tom, here's the thing. They're 1-4 this year in the ACC, which doesn't sound great. And I know what I'm about to say.
Uh-oh.
Hey, I know what I'm about to say doesn't mean anything. It's not going to go on your NCAA tournament resume or whatever resume you're talking about. But I feel like they have gotten better in their execution of so many things. It's just not showing up on the scoreboard right now. Last year's team would have lost by 25 to Louisville.
Yep. When it was a 16-point game.
Done.
That's a 26-point game.
Done.
Yeah. So I agree. And that's not a weird spot. And that's not weird to say that they're a better basketball team than what they were last year. But it's something where you've got to put all 40 minutes together. You can't fall into the 16-point hole. You can't do what you did at the end of the game and expect to win. They had long known how to do that. They still don't know how to do that. For as good as they are, they don't know how to close out close games. And when they get in a close game, Boston College, Louisville, North Carolina State, you just kind of get the sense that they're just not going to they're not going to make the plays that they need to make.
Because they're a premier player short.
Right.
They've got a premier player in John Mooney. And then you have a really, really good player that's having a bounce-back season in T.J. Gibbs. And then you get Prentice Hubb, who for a couple of games was dazzling, then had a rough one against Louisville. And I guess that's part of being a sophomore. I guess if you get two out of three games that are really, really good, you're going to take that.
Yeah.
And you've got a really good piece in Dane Goodwin that I think has to get a little better on the defensive end, needs to be a little more consistent on the offensive end, but he has the makings of a player that you can be, I guess, can say he's a part of the foundation for the next
right.
2 years. And then you get down to Durham, who just is not physical enough around the rim. He and Leshefsky cost them 8 to 10 points on Saturday by not being strong around the bucket.
Yep.
And I've said this to you, and I think I texted you during the game, even though we were like 100 yards apart at the game. I basically, and I'll just say it like I say it to you, Durham needs to dunk the damn ball. Take the ball and dunk it. Don't finesse it. Get fouled. If you go up to jam it, you're probably going to get fouled, and that would be the worst thing that would happen in the situation. They're too finessey. People not named John Mooney among big men around the rim. And it cost him, I really believe, Tom, 8 to 10 points in that game on Saturday.
There was a sequence last week. I'm going to back up to the game in Raleigh last Wednesday where the ball was falling out of bounds and Juwan Durham had a chance to save it. And save it, by saving it, taking it and throwing it off a North Carolina State player. He almost threw it like, he almost like handed to him. I don't want to turn around and fire the ball. I don't want to be mean and fire the ball off this guy's head so we get the possession. He kind of just handed the ball to the North Carolina State guy, and it's like, you've been in this program now for 3 years. You've seen what the ACC is all about, and if you're going to be soft, there's no place for you in this league anywhere. And Juwan Durham, to an extent, is still soft around the basket.
He's 6'11".
I know.
I'm 6'3". His age, I could dunk at 6'3". Now, I had to have a running start, but still, I could dunk the doggone thing.
And a milk crate underneath the rim.
No, That's a fictional story you're telling. But it does cost them around the rim.
It does.
Points.
And we talk about, you say there are players short. And I think that player right now is Nate Leshefsky. Like, Nate Leshefsky.
I'm waiting.
There was so much hype. And I'm guilty of it. Like where's the line for apologizing for saying Nate Leshefsky is going to be a major impact player?
North Carolina wanted him. I remember you told me that.
I'm at the front of the line because everything I was led to believe from people in this program, and they went a totally different direction. And I think to an extent that's cost this team. They went a totally different direction when Mike Bray said, we're going to play two bigs. You've never really played two bigs.
I agree.
And I think part of that was, I'm just going to just throw this out.
Okay.
I think part of Mike Bray deciding that he wanted to go with Juwan Durham and John Mooney was to show Hunter Dickinson, we can play with two bigs. And if you come here next year, DeMatha kid, 7'1", Mike Bray had recruited him from literally the kid's first day in high school. And he was number one on Mike Bray's radar for years, committed to Michigan. And I think that choice at the beginning of the year, like I was led to believe through the entire offseason, if you want to look at one guy that's going to be key for a breakout season, he's going to be the next guy that's going to make that jump that so many players in this program have made, it was Nate Leshefsky. He was going to start. He was going to be the perimeter threat that everybody thought he was going to be when he signed here. So I jumped on a Nate Leshefsky train and said, watch out for this guy. He's playing 30 minutes a game. He's going to get as many shots as he wants. He's going to start. And then all of a sudden, we go there for the first practice, and we see Juwan Durham paired with John Mooney. And you're like, huh? What? Why? And so now I think maybe Mike Bray's rethinking that because you saw what happened the other day against Louisville. They're 27 seconds into the second half. 27 seconds into the second half. what happens.
Good call on your part, by the way, on this, because I thought he was mad at Durham for being weak around the rim and he yanked him, but you nailed it because you saw Mike thinking, we can play with just one big against Louisville. We're not going to get hurt at the defensive end. Call by you.
We've got to do what we've done in the past, and that's just totally scrap what we think we want to do, and let's just downshift and get Dane Goodwin in the game. Juwan Durham played 27 seconds in the second half and never came back in against Malik Williams, against Stephen Enoch, against Dwayne Sutton, against that size and physicality of Louisville. Mike Bray said, we're going to play the way we're used to playing. So they downshifted. And I really think maybe they should have started that way this year, playing four perimeter guys around John Mooney, because regardless of how many big guys you put on the floor, John Mooney's still getting 15 rebounds a game.
Remember before the Boston College game, I was actually at Boston College getting ready to call a hockey game, and mm-hmm. we started to kick around, what would you do with the starting lineup?
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was take Durham out and put Goodwin in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always just saw, and you've always written about it, they're better when it's four out, one in.
Yeah.
And I just didn't see enough from Durham to keep him in that role. But I will say this, Goodwin provided what you're looking for off the bench too, so you hated to mess with that. So right. It wasn't a gimme decision. But I just always felt like this team has always been better when you've got the four guys on the perimeter and the big, in this case Mooney, down low.
And maybe they play that way more. Like Mike Bryce said, he said Tuesday, they're going to start the same way.
And I really thought, and I don't remember which game this occurred, but Mike talked to us before one of the games, and he made the comment, you know, maybe Juwan Durham is who he is.
It was before the Maryland game.
And I thought, well, at that point, maybe he's going to start thinking about going four out, one in again.
See,
after that comment. But then Durham had some good performances.
See, here's the thing, and this gets into a gray area with Mike Bray on a lot of topics, whether it's recruiting, whether it's staff, whether it's players. Mike Bray, for everything that he is, if there's one aspect about Mike Bray, it's that he's loyal. And that loyalty, that loyalty sometimes helps him, and that loyalty sometimes hurts him. Now, he's loyal to Juwan Durham because Juwan Durham took a chance and said, I'm going to transfer, and I can go to Florida State. I can go to Georgia Tech. I can go to any big-time school, and I'm going to go to Notre Dame. And I think Mike Bray, he's always been loyal to transfers. You look at his transfer record, whether it's Ryan Humphrey that he inherited, whether it's Ben Hansborough, whether it's Scott Martin, if he gets a transfer, that transfer is going to be a major contributor in his program. And I think that's where he was with Durham. Like, he wanted Juwan Durham. He wanted so badly, Darren, he wanted Juwan Durham so badly to be a key guy. That was one of the reasons he brought him to ACC Media Day. And I guarantee you, all the other media in Charlotte this year for ACC Media Day looked at Juwan Durham and had that same reaction you just gave me.
What?
Like Rex Pfluger? Where's Rex Pfluger? TJ Gibbs? Where's TJ? Prentice Hubb? Where are those guys? We're going to talk to Juwan Durham? Like, Mike Bray so badly wanted Juwan Durham to be a main guy. And he's just he's a
jump shooter.
He's a piece. He's just a piece to the puzzle. He's not going to be a main guy.
Do you agree he's a jump shooter?
Yeah. Like, look at the jump shot he made the other day against Louisville at the top of the key.
And I'm sure in video sessions, I mean, we all remember Hump. I mean, he would destroy the rim.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he dunked that ball hard. And I'm sure he shows video like, Juwan, just take that baby and just stuff it through the cylinder. Just ram it home.
Well, I forget what game it was, but he turned and he had nobody there at the basket. And he pump faked nobody. He pump faked nobody and then went and laid it in. It's like, it's got to be just automatic. Turn, dunk. Don't think. Don't worry about anybody that might be in your way. Just dunk the ball, please.
I think the part that's hard to wrap your head around as we talk Irish basketball, Tom Noy, Darren Pritchett with you. Irish basketball coming up tonight, 8:10 pregame, 8:30 tip, as the Irish visit Georgia Tech. You come out of the Syracuse game, and the Irish had to play extremely well the last 10 minutes, even have a chance to win that game. Now, Syracuse isn't Syracuse, but at the Carrier Dome, Syracuse is scoring. Notre Dame is putting together kind of that old-school Big East performance where they're throwing it through the bucket. They're getting into the 80s, and they still had to close out that game. Mm-hmm. And, Tom, they look like a confident team closing out that game. And you wondered, was that classic game where you got over the hump? It's that game as a fan when things are really good down the line, you look back. Remember when they beat Syracuse? All those things that they didn't used to do or they'd have trouble doing, they got it done in that game. And now look at them go. And then you see the NC State game. You're up 12 in the second half. Now, was fatigue their number one enemy?
No.
I don't think so. I think it was a factor, but I know the strength and conditioning coach, and they are in great shape. These aren't 40-year-old guys running around.
Mm-hmm.
These are young guys. They can play 40 minutes and get the job done. So was it a factor? Yeah. Had he played Jogo a couple of minutes, would it have been a different story? No, I don't really think so. I really don't. So you couldn't close out that one. And then you have this great comeback against Louisville, a top 15 team. You're down 16 with, what, about 3 minutes to go in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
You turn it around. You go up by four. You have 2 3-point shots to go up seven. I think it was Hub and Goodwin.
Yep.
Back-to-back possessions. You could go up seven. Couldn't get it done. And then the last couple of minutes, I don't know if I'm being fair here. You can jump in. But I don't know if they all were on the same page, same purpose.
No.
Trying to get things done offensively down the stretch, including that last possession. But all that hope that came out of the Syracuse game, it just feels like it's gone again.
Well, and you know what? I think Mike Bray wanted to downplay that because even after the victory over Syracuse, he kind of walked back like, don't put us in the NCAA tournament just yet.
Oh, no.
Because what they did against Syracuse was the same thing they did against Detroit Mercy, the same thing they did against UCLA. What do those three teams have in common? They all play a majority zone. This is a zone team. They see zone, they relax, and they say, we can play loose, we can play free, let's swing it, let's move it, let's make the extra pass, let's make shots. Where this team gets into trouble, and Mike Bray saw it coming, NC State and Louisville, it happened against Maryland, it happened against Indiana, it happened to an extent against North Carolina. When teams can get physical and get up into this Notre Dame team, that's where they have problems. That's where the offense gets stagnant. That's where they turn it over more. That's where the shots don't fall. That's where it doesn't look easy. Like NC State and Louisville make Notre Dame uncomfortable. And they can't – this is a program right now that just still can't – they can't work past being uncomfortable and still executing to the point where they can win an ACC game.
Tom Noy, Fighting Irish Basketball Insider for the South Bend Tribune, filling in for Sean. I'm Darren Pritchett. It is 24 minutes after 6 o'clock. If you're into bubbles and resumes and all that type of stuff, there's a really fun website. I use it for college hockey. It's one of the rare websites that gives you some good insight. They do the same thing for basketball. I don't know if you ever use it or not, playoffstatus.com.
Darren, why would I even look at that the last 2 years?
But have you used it in the past?
No, because there's been no reason to.
5 years ago, have you used playoff status?
No, because 5 years ago, they were 32-6.
Anyway.
But good call anyway.
Anyway, I'm just saying it's kind of fun as a fan. If you have a favorite team, it gives you a little idea where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
And in the pecking order, they're number 117 with a 2% chance to make the NCAA tournament. So that kind of puts it into perspective. I mean, Indiana State has a 12% chance.
It's going to be really hard because the ACC is so down this year where you don't have – usually if you're 1-4 right now and you're Mike Bray, you're thinking to yourself, look at all these ranked teams coming through that we're going to have a chance at. And that's just not going to – like it would be a really big step for Notre Dame to go and win at Virginia, but that's – I don't know how good of a win that would be this year because Virginia's down. Virginia's so down. The league's so down. Like there are some good wins that they could possibly get, but in the big picture, I don't know how they're really going to matter.
Purdue, 14%. Of course, if you win the conference tournament, this is a moot point.
Right.
You look at other teams, Michigan, a 41% chance. Ohio State, who has looked horrible recently, they beat Nebraska last night. They're at 51%. And let me move up. Indiana, they're at 83% right now. I'm not going all in on that one yet.
I am running far away from Indiana because, yeah, they're 13-3, and we may talk about Indiana later in our rapid fire segment. But I'm not sold on Indiana at all until you do something away from the greater Bloomington area, and that also includes the greater Indianapolis area. Go win a game somewhere out of state, and then we'll start thinking about the Hoosiers.
Butler at 99%, and most importantly, the Dayton Flyers at 98%. Oh, my goodness.
They're going to the Elite Eight, baby.
Look at the alma mater.
Man.
Unbelievable.
Now, that's a team that you have. That Dayton team has become almost Notre Dame-esque when we mentioned 2015. They're, like, number one in the country in efficiency. They score it. I mean, they're fun to watch. Obi Toppin.
Listening to a lot of St. Louis sports radio recently, and they are building up the SLU-Dayton game. Like, the commercials put out by SLU are all about, hey, nationally ranked Dayton is coming to. It's one of the biggest games in recent history. It's like more about Dayton than the Billikens.
Absolutely. It's like, come see Obi Toppin and the Dayton Flyers.
Well, unbelievable. We'll come back with rapid fire, and one of the questions we will kick around.
I love the first one, too, by the way. I can't wait for that one.
The number one reason why Notre Dame forward John Mooney is not on the Wooden Award watch list. Answers coming up in just a moment on WSBT.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Sean is off tonight. Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. It is time for Rapid Fire. Here comes the first question. The number one reason why Notre Dame forward John Mooney, Mr. Double-Double, is not on the Wooden Award watch list. Tom Noy.
Sheer and utter stupidity. Really. I mean, there's no other way around it. The guy leads the nation in rebounding. He leads the ACC in double-doubles. He's not among the top 25 players on the Wooden watch list. Like, it's dumb. It's just absolutely dumb and stupid on that part, and Mike Bray was absolutely right in his criticism of the Wooden people of not having him. I'm not saying John Mooney's going to win it, but for him not to be one of the top 25 players in the country, that's almost as bad as Pat Connaughton not making All-District in 2015 because people forget about where Notre Dame is and what they're all about. They have an identity crisis in college basketball. When you look at some of these people that are on the top 25 watch list, John Mooney deserves to be there.
And he's doing it in a premier conference.
Absolutely. Against premier front lines and future NBA guys. He's not doing it in the Mountain West or the West Coast Conference. It's the ACC, people.
He can hit threes. He works around the basket. He rebounds. He holds his own defensively. There's just some people that do not have their eyes open.
Nope.
Involved in that watch list. Rapid fire question number two. True or false? Cormac Ryan, who transferred to Notre Dame from Stanford and is sitting out this year, he would be the second best player on this year's team behind John Mooney.
False. Maybe 2B.
Who's number two?
Prentice Hubb.
Okay.
I know you don't agree with that assessment.
Well, I have not seen Cormac Ryan play, so it's really hard to.
And neither have I, but all indications I've heard.
From what I've heard,
yeah,
he will provide an outside shooting presence.
Put it this way. When this season ends.
Yes, sir.
Cormac Ryan is stepping into the starting lineup and may never come out. That's what I've been told, is he's going to be a main guy for so many different reasons other than just the fact that he can score and he's healthy.
All right. I don't know a lot about Ryan. You know more, so that question was more to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say, just going by what I've heard, at worst he'd be number three.
Right. Okay. And I would put him number three.
Okay. The next rapid-fire question, the Butler Bulldogs.
my Butler Bulldogs.
Your Butler Bulldogs?
Yeah. Who does the blue ribbon preview for the Butler Bulldogs? That would be one Tom Noy.
I'm a secondary Butler fan because I like the way they play and I love their little gymnasium they have down there.
God, I wish I could do a game from Hinkle Fieldhouse just once.
That would be really cool.
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, that would be very, very cool. Butler, number five of the country. I think it's fair to say they are the best college basketball team in the state of Indiana. So my question is, who is number...
Number two.
Number two.
And the answer is... There isn't one.
Whoa!
There isn't.
Whoa!
I went through and I looked at all the other teams. I'm like, okay, who's number two? And we've already discussed Indiana. I'm not putting Indiana. I don't care. You're 13-3. Go win a Big Ten game on the road. And they win tonight at Rutgers, then maybe we'll consider them. But then you've got... They're just kind of all average teams. Purdue, yeah, they walloped Michigan State, but they scored, what, 19 points at Illinois against Illinois?
37.
Was it 19?
It was like that Penn State-Illinois game 10 years ago. It was like 32-30.
Which set basketball back. I think I still got that text from you from that game. But there's really no number two team. Like you've got Butler, who's really, really good, and they've come from absolutely nowhere. And then all these other teams are just kind of like,
There's never any buzz about the recruiting classes.
Never. They weren't even in the top 25 this year. Mm. Like, people are talking about Xavier. They're talking about Purdue. They're talking about Indiana. Yes. They're talking about Michigan State. What about Butler? We'll dismiss that.
Butler's number one. The team with the best win out of the rest of the state is Evansville.
Yeah, but
it would be Kentucky.
There are issues going on at Evansville.
No. I'm just saying the best win of Butler, you would have to say is Evansville
when
they beat
at Kentucky. Rupp Arena.
Yeah, but
and
now
the wheels
coach,
fell off.
Yeah, a little problem there.
Yeah, a little Title IX issue. But you can't find a good team in the state.
It's hard. Indiana beat Notre Dame head to head. Purdue, I think, will beat Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give a slight advantage to Purdue only because they're coming off that very, very impressive whooping of Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans at home. But let me say this. They shoot lights out at home. They stink on the road.
Yeah. Like the number two team.
There is not a perfect number two team.
It's like a week-to-week number two. Like Butler's always going to be up there at number one. And maybe it was Notre Dame after they beat Syracuse. Maybe it was Indiana earlier. Maybe now it's Purdue. Who's it going to be next week?
The Mastodons.
The Fort Wayne Mastodons.
Next rapid fire question. Which ACC home team is most likely to lose tonight? Here are your four choices. The home team most likely to lose tonight. Syracuse is hosting Boston College. Florida State is welcoming Virginia to Tallahassee. North Carolina State is going to take on Miami down in Raleigh. And, of course, Georgia Tech hosting Notre Dame. So who do you have? Syracuse, Florida State, NC State, Georgia Tech, the home team in the ACC most likely to lose tonight.
Georgia Tech. 0-2 at home in league play. Haven't won a home game. Notre Dame hasn't won a home game either. Those other ones, like Syracuse, I know the Syracuse is down. They should beat Boston College at the Dome. NC State, they're not losing to Miami. I think Miami's not very good. Georgia Tech, Notre Dame. What were the other ones?
Florida State, Syracuse, NC State, Georgia Tech.
And Florida State's really good. Like, I don't see Florida State losing. If this was last year, yeah, Florida State's not going to win at home against Virginia. But Virginia's different this year, and Florida State's different. Florida State's better. I'm putting my money, if I had any, I'd put it on the Yellow Jackets.
Well, C.J. Bryce is a game-time decision once again tonight.
Mm.
Has been dealing with a concussion. He missed the Notre Dame game. He's missed four consecutive games. Miami.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take the Hurricanes.
To upset.
Because NC State still does not have their best player. And they did not look great against Notre Dame for most of that game. Now, they played pretty well coming down the stretch. But I'm going to say Miami on the road sneaks by NC State. That NC State will be my home team most likely to lose.
Let's see what happens. Because I'm taking the Irish.
Okay. I just see the history of the Irish there. It's scary to take them. Rapid fire, question number five. What would you like to see Brian Kelly do with the final spot on his offensive coaching staff to build on the Tommy Reese to offensive coordinator move? I asked Tommy/Tom Noy that question.
Or as some people said on Twitter today, Thomas. No, yes. We'll just stick with Tom.
Thomas Train.
Go hire the best tight ends coach in the country. Done.
Okay.
Piece of cake. See, rapid fire.
Simple as that.
You probably had that question set yesterday, and you scratched out offense. It was originally, what would you like to see Brian Kelly do with the offensive coordinator position?
Actually, I hosted by myself last night, so I wasn't going to ask myself any questions in rapid fire.
You could have called me. I would have jumped on. I could have jumped on. I was on my way to La Lumiere to talk with Jade, do my Jaden Ivey column. I heard you hosting, steering the ship all by yourself. I'm like, man, I feel bad now I left Darren Hayden.
No, I had a great time amusing myself. That's really bad.
Yes, we're just leaving that one alone.
Wow.
Hire the best tight ends coach and carry on.
I'm sweating. Okay, I'm going to stick with what I've said for a month.
What's that?
Mike Denbrock, bring him in as the guy that's the king of the offense, and he can help out with the offensive line. He's coached every position you can possibly think of, so he can be your utility knife.
Like just offensive guru?
He knows the offense better than anybody else. So
jack of all trades?
He's the safety net.
Thought Tom Reese was the safety net.
No, he is the up-and-comer.
Uh-huh. Let's see how all that works out.
Final rapid-fire question. What Super Bowl matchup would be the most intriguing to you?
To me? The Green Bay Packers and the Tennessee Titans.
Why is that?
Well, my family has had Green Bay Packers season tickets for like 65 years.
Ah.
So I kind of have a rooting interest for the Green Bay Packers, and I'd like to see them win another Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, and I think they could. Like, Tennessee's one of those teams where nobody talks about, and all of a sudden they wake up, and you're like, wait a minute. How did Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel and those guys get in the Super Bowl? Like, I'm kind of Andy Reid and the Chiefs. I'm Andy Reid it out. Like,
as a Bronco fan, I
see. So now you understand.
I want to see a team that brings back the images of Larry Zonka and John Riggins to get to the Super Bowl.
Well, the Dolphins and the Redskins aren't playing.
But it's Henry and the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, he's a horse.
Three straight games over 180. They were putting 8 in the box. They couldn't stop him. Remarkable. So I'm kind of interested to see if that can happen again. Somebody wins the Super Bowl with a power running game like that. And from the NFC, gosh, I'm okay with either one.
Green Bay Packers. Eh? That's my Wisconsin. That's my Wisconsin.
Green Bay, Tennessee. The Heartland would be fun.
See, there you go. Like I said, Green Bay, Tennessee.
Like the NFC, in the 100th year of the NFL, you got royalty playing in the NFC. Packers, Niners. The AFC, you have the garbage bin. Chiefs and Titans.
Wow.
No history. Well, Chiefs have history, but they never do anything.
Right.
They get to this point and then
we'll
see if they get her done at home against Tennessee. That is Rapid Fire, 6:45 Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT and on the Sports Beat app. It is 9 minutes in front of the top of the hour. I am so glad
that I'm here.
Yes. And?
It's Wednesday.
And?
You're leaving on a hockey trip tomorrow?
That Fox Sports brought back the old NBA NBC thing.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
What do you think of Jordan right now?
No. I like the old. Give me the old CBS one. Where's my man Jerry at?
You mean the college basketball
thing? No, the NBA on CBS from the 80s. I don't have my headphones. Yeah, see this.
Need anything else?
I could dinner.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I could listen to this all day. This is my song.
Dick Stockton and Tommy Heinsohn coming to you from the Boston Garden.
From the Forum. Come
the
on,
Boston
right.
Garden.
The Forum.
No.
We're in Inglewood.
No, we are in Boston.
2:30 on a Sunday afternoon. Ooh. NBA Finals, baby.
And the other forward from Indiana State, number 33, Larry Bird. The center is from Centenary, 7 foot, number 00, Robert Parrish.
And you know what? That guy just passed away.
Parrish did?
No. The PA announcer.
Oh, okay.
He used to do PA announcing for Boston Garden. So I grew up as a Celtic Laker guy. And I grew up listening to him. And the first time I went to Conte Forum, he was the PA guy at Conte Forum. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And he died last summer.
As a kid, I had it memorized.
I know.
That whole starting five, because it didn't change forever.
Ever. From Pepperdine, Dennis Johnson.
Dennis Johnson. Number 33, Larry Bird. The head coach, K.C. Jones.
We're in the 80s here, people. We're talking about the 80s. It's 2020. Well, we're back in 1985
right NBA now. Was good.
When the NBA was good.
Awesome. It was awesome. All right, how about a couple of keys for the Irish tonight down at Georgia Tech? What is atop your list?
What isn't atop the list? Like, you can't let Georgia Tech's guards, and they got really good guards, Michael DeVoe and Jose Alvarado. If those guys get going, then they get confident. And Josh Pastner said it on Monday. He said, it's a guards league, and if you've got really good guards, you got a chance to be really good. Their guards were good against Boston College and against Georgia Tech, against North Carolina. So when their guards get going, then James Banks gets going. Then everybody else, Moses Wright, gets going. So it's going to be Notre Dame's guards are going to have to be good, and their bigs are going to have to be good because they're going to run bodies at John Mooney and Juwan Durham. How are they going to handle it? The one saving grace, I think, maybe for the Irish is Georgia Tech plays a lot of zone. Mm-hmm. They junk it up, 1-3-1, maybe a 2-3. It looks like a man, but then they fall back. Maybe they play a little 3-2. If Georgia Tech does that and Notre Dame can hit some shots over the top, maybe they finally figure out a way to get a win in Midtown Atlanta.
PlayoffStatus.com has Georgia Tech at a 4% chance of making the NCAA tournament, which is more than North Carolina right now.
It is. How do you like, okay, the ACC Network guys, they rank their ACC teams.
Don't tell
They
me.
Rank all 15 ACC teams, and right now Wake Forest has as bad of a league record as Notre Dame. So does North Carolina. Has as bad of a league record as Notre Dame. But the team they rank last, well, Notre Dame, because, well, we can't possibly rank a team from North Carolina as the worst team in the ACC. What a bunch of homers.
What? That's why I'm glad I don't even have the ACC Network. Ugh. I don't even have to deal with that stuff.
Come on. Jordan Cornette, you guys are better than that.
I guess ACC they won't be Network. Watching the game tonight either. So
no, you won't be.
Just hold your phone up to the screen, FaceTime it, I'll watch the game. 6:55 at WSBT. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Irish basketball at 8:10. Georgia Tech and Notre Dame here on WSBT South Bend. Thank you, Thomas.
First to 60 wins tonight. See ya.
Mark it down, folks.